Our family formed Wyoming Pure LLC in 2004, and we began direct marketing our beef as Wyoming Pure Natural Beef. We wanted to diversify, and we felt this would be a way to stabilize the income we received from our livestock. To be more competitive, we felt it was necessary to be USDA inspected to obtain more marketing options and to be more competitive. In order to obtain our own label, we had to go through an extensive USDA approval process. We market our beef as all natural. No antibiotics or hormones are given to any of the beef that we direct market. The cattle graze on grass as long as possible, but we do finish our cattle on grain. Most all of the feed that we utilize is raised on the ranch, and we all do all of the finishing on the ranch as well. The cattle never leave our property until processing. After the beef is processed, it's allowed to dry age for 21 days, then cut and frozen in vacuum packaging. The beef is brought back to our facility where we inventory it and then distribute it in halves, quarters, or small packages. The customers are charged by the final cut pound. We offer free local delivery or we ship UPS at the customer's expense, and we have shipped to every state in the nation except for Hawaii. Customers can order by phone or through our website. About a third of our business is done online. Half and quarter beef orders are all taken over the phone. The business started out slow at first. It took about 5 years to really gain momentum. Gaining a customer base takes time. Trust in your product by the end consumer is key. Word of mouth advertising by happy customers is what can really drive your business, but an unhappy customer can kill it. We try to make ordering and receiving our beef as easy as possible, and customer service is a top priority. We do all of our own local deliveries. It's important for us to keep that one-on-one customer contact. Processing is one of the most critical elements of the business, and it is one of the biggest challenges. If the beef is not processed consistently, then you end up with unhappy customers. We don't have a USDA-inspected facility in Wyoming, so we use one in Colorado. The distance that we have to travel for processing is a huge drawback. We've tried many processors and have had many challenging experiences along the way. The facility we use now is very consistent and will do whatever they can to help us do exactly what we want. Some processors no longer offer dry aging, and some will only dry age for a short time. But we feel the 21-day aging process is a key to ensure flavor, tenderness, and consistency. Our processor is a small family-owned and operated facility, so we have to make appointments a year in advance in order to make sure we have the appointments that we need. That limits us in how much we can expand. We can always take a few less head to process, but getting more squeezed in can be an issue. Pricing the product can also be difficult as costs continue to rise. We need to make a profit, but also stay competitive. There is a great deal of competition out there with other large e-commerce companies like Omaha Steaks, for instance. What we try to convey to our customers through social media, as well as farmers markets and trade shows, is they know how our beef is raised, how it's handled and processed, and they know it came from us, this small family farm in southeast Wyoming. It's a quality product and competitively priced. Having a glut of ground beef and round steak on hand is always a challenge. Everybody wants a ribeye or a T-bone, but a round steak is not very popular. We do offer small packages that include steaks, roasts, and ground beef. Not everyone wants a half or a quarter beef, so this package works well for those that don't want a large amount, and it helps us move our lower-end products. We did sell jerky and summer sausage for a time. Getting label approval for the jerky and summer sausage was difficult. We were not able to use the words natural beef on the label itself. We were able to rectify that, but the processor we were using to do those products for us went out of business. And we are having a hard time finding someone else that can do those for us, as our current process is not capable of doing those types of products. Our website was a large investment, but it's critical to have an online presence, and it needs to be user-friendly. One of the challenges I have personally is keeping up with technology. There are so many aspects to social media marketing. There's Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. The list goes on, and it makes my head hurt when my kids try to explain it to me. But that's how people shop and find what they want. So I depend on people much younger than myself to keep us online. Whenever we receive an order from a new customer, I always ask how they found us. Some say, "I hear your ad on the radio all the time," which we do advertise on the radio locally. Or, "A friend or a coworker told me about you." But the number one response we hear is, "I Googled Wyoming beef," or, "I Googled natural beef, and your name came up." No one has ever said, "I found your number in the phone book." Online presence is very important. Our business is working for us, but it's definitely not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a lot of work, but it's also very gratifying. One of the things I love most about our business is getting to meet our customers. Most consumers are so far removed from agriculture, even here in Wyoming. Talking with them in person or even on the phone helps them to put a face to agriculture, and it makes us seem like real people. They ask us so many questions about how we raise our beef, what we feed them, and we love it when our customers tell us how much they love our beef or that they appreciate what we do. Many times we hear from our customers that they had stopped eating beef or won't buy it at the grocery store anymore because they think it tastes bad or smells bad, but they love our dry-aged beef. Another comment we hear quite often is, "This is how I remember beef growing up." It makes me feel good knowing that in some small way we are helping to promote the beef industry. We've come a long way in the last 13 years. We've started out printing a few brochures at home and telling a few friends and neighbors that we have freezer beef for sale. We have gone from selling a few head a year to a few thousand pounds each month. It's taken a lot of hard work, dedication, and research to try to find our market. We have had great support along the way from Extension, the University of Wyoming Animal Science Department, the Wyoming Business Council, the Wyoming Beef Council, and the Wyoming Department of Agriculture, and of course, our very loyal customers. It's our goal to be in business for many years to come. I want to thank you all for allowing me to be here today and to tell my story. Thank you. And insulated containers with ice. And then we try not to let anything be in shipping more than 3 days. And we make sure that our customers are aware of that when they order. And we only ship on Mondays and Tuesdays so the beef can get to its destination before the weekend.
Yeah, you ran fast. With all your costs of product development, advertising, building your customer base, finding a processor, your website, technology, all the things that your talk really focused on, what I'm interested in is, have you done analysis to know whether the value added that you've chosen the route to harvest your beef product from your ranch has enhanced the bottom line of your ranching business?
Simple question. Yes, we do feel that it is enhancing our bottom line. Otherwise, my husband wouldn't be letting me do this. No, I can't give you that exact figure.
Sorry. But it's better.
It's better.
Great.
Oh. Are there any complications from the kind of grains you feed, whether or not they're genetically modified or anything like that?
No, we've seen none. We do have people that ask about that, but we don't feel that it really makes a big difference for us.
Other questions?
Hi there. Do you have a year-round calving? I mean, do you have a multiple calving seasons during the year, and how do you meet the demand?
We don't have multiple, but we do. We have a rather lengthy calving season, and we just finish cattle as we need them. We bring them off of grass and finish them as we need them.
Okay. Thank you.
Getting a lot of your traffic from Google and whatnot, so they're searching for Wyoming beef. What other words are they putting in that string? Is it Wyoming beef pure, Wyoming beef natural, Wyoming beef organic? What are the popular terms?
Most of them are Wyoming beef or natural beef. Some use grass-fed beef. It all kind of works the same. But those are the main terms that they use.
One last question. We'll have some time at the end probably as well.
I'm interested in your comments about your processing facility. You're not the first person who has expressed maybe some discontent with the options available to you as a small producer. Do you have any thoughts on that and possibly some suggestions for anybody from USDA in the room on how we could create better options for small producers on the processing side?
I think we need more processing facilities, and I know they're expensive, but we have to travel a long ways to get to ours, and it's important that it be USDA inspected, otherwise we can't ship it. And I would say that the small processors need help, but I also know that they have a difficult time finding employees. The workforce just isn't there. And so I think that's why several small processors have closed.
Your ad says organically raised. Do you spray pastures or feed Roundup Ready corn?
We don't spray. They graze on our grass, and our ranch is certified organic. The grass is certified organic. But, no, the corn is not certified.
Can you feed that? And still, can you feed GMO corn and still call it organically raised?
We're not calling. It's not labeled as organic.
It says on your
head. That we raise them organically to a point, I guess. Yep.
Thank you for the questions. Hopefully we'll have time at the very end to bring you back up to ask some more. The next part of our panel.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. I just came from up the road down in Denver a little bit earlier today to spend time with you. And what I'm going to share with you, again, over the next few minutes here is, what do consumers think of our product? I mean, we know they love beef, but there's a lot more to it than that. We need to understand what are the things they really, really care about, and what are those things that concern them. And that helps inform NCBA, for example, as one contractor for the checkoff. What should we be working on? What do we need? What challenges that beef has to make sure this our product gets sold at the same rates it's been, do we need to address? How do we need to talk to consumers about concerns they have, for example, with nutrition or production practices, and I'll talk more about that. So I'll go over a little bit about the beef industry long-range plan. I think it's important to understand kind of where we get our direction, our marching orders, how that comes to be, and it really informs us and other checkoff contractors about the things that we should be focusing on from one year to the next. Then I'll talk a little bit about the evolution of the beef target audience. How do we decide which consumers to talk to? There aren't any consumers we don't talk to, but Are there certain targets or generations, for example, that we should focus on more than others because we see opportunity there that we really need to take advantage of? Then I'll just share some consumer data. You'll see graphs and charts, but I'll point out where the key information is on those. I'll talk a little bit about the product, what consumers think about our product. Then I'll spend just a few minutes also talking about what they think about beef production and production of food in general. They're very inquisitive and want to know where their food comes from. So we have to be very diligent to make sure we're as transparent as possible and we provide them that information. The Beef Industry Long Range Plan, this is just a snapshot of what this looks like. We do it every 5 years. It's a you know, boiled down to a lot of detail there, a lot of words on that page. But essentially, it's developed every 5 years. The last one was developed in 15 and was approved in 2016 by the Cattlemen's Beef Board, NCBA's board, who kind of come together every 5 years and develop this plan. The way it gets developed is there's, at least this last time, and Dr. Pond was part of this process, there were 16 volunteer leaders that were kind of handpicked because we wanted to make sure we had producers very well represented. We wanted to make sure we had academia, we had economists, we had people from the retail channel, from food service. So all these folks came together over a period of about 8 months and developed the priorities that they said the beef industry, based on a lot of information and data that they reviewed, needed to talk about over the next 5 years. So they do things like they conducted a SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Where do those lie? Develop core strategies, develop priorities, and then ultimately said, well, how do we know if we're being successful? And they developed the measures, and that's a lot of what I help facilitate in terms of going through that. So a lot of the themes that came out of that, you know, again, if you look back at the last prior five-year plan and the one prior to that, a lot of these themes are the same. They don't change that quickly. You know, research, they said, critically important, safety, nutrition research. We have to make sure we're doing our due diligence. What are consumer preferences? What are their likes? What are their dislikes? Focus on that. Health perception, perceived value proposition. Millennials, that generation really came to the forefront over the last several years. We continue to really pay attention to what millennials think about our product. Production practices. More and more, that became something in our research. We saw consumers say, how is our food produced? You know, what are the folks out there doing? Are they raising it responsibly? What about hormones? What about antibiotics, et cetera? So the vision of that plan is to responsibly produce the most trusted and preferred protein in the world. That's what that body of 16 folks ultimately said. If we're successful, this is the vision that we want to have and have come true. This is the scorecard. Again, a lot of stuff on here. Not expecting anyone to go through all this or read any of it. It's just to let you know that the due diligence in terms of, are we doing what we said we were going to set out to do? Are we doing those things, and how are we performing against those? So every year we update that and say, are we on the right track? Do we need to make adjustments? Market research is what I spend a lot of my time doing, and there's a lot of tools that we use. So regardless of what the challenge is, we may be doing focus groups because we really need to understand what consumers think, listen to them speak and talk about beef, the product. What do they like? What are their concerns? What about beef production? What are their concerns? And I'll talk more in detail on that. But we use a lot of different tools there depending on what we need to accomplish. A couple of the studies that I'll share with you are some of the bigger and broader studies that we do every year. So what about the target audiences? If we go back in time, over the years, we obviously are looking at data and looking at trends and projecting those out into the future and saying, where are the opportunities from an audience standpoint? If you go back to 2007, if you remember the Checkoff advertising, there was kind of a nutrition message and a eating experience message or taste. We merged those two based on a lot of market research and came up with segment, if you will, called Food and Health Involved. People that really enjoyed food, beef for sure, but were also health conscious. So we kind of went down that path. That's where we did a lot of focus. That evolved to where the millennials started becoming more and more important as they became of age and they started to get out of school and start families and their earning powers continued to excel. Not to mention the fact that there's 80 or 90 million of them, I think the largest generation ever. So we said we have to pay attention to what millennials are thinking and how we engage them to enjoy and continue to eat our product. That evolved, as we did more research, into older millennial parents, because those parents, obviously, they're starting to raise their families, and that next generation of beef eaters are now children, and we need to make sure those older millennial parents understand the benefits and the value, the nutritional benefits, all the things about beef, so they start to put it on the dinner table when those kids are young so that they develop those habits and give us the next generation of beef eaters. So let's talk about the product a little bit. We do a lot of studies every year. We're constantly looking for where are our information gaps. What don't we know and what do we need to know to make the best decisions with your checkoff dollars? One of the studies we do, it's more of a broad tracker. It's called the Consumer Beef Index. We talk to 1,000 consumers twice a year. It's done scientifically, so it's representative of the population. But we'll also slice and dice that data to say, okay, here's what the population thinks. Here's what millennials think. Here's what older millennial parents think. Are they different? If so, why are they different? And how does that inform what we're going to do with our programs year after year? So there's a lot going on this slide. But the things that I want you to pay attention to mostly are this 73%. We started this study back in 2008. And the key question in this study was very straightforward. It said, based on everything you know about beef, the product, would you say the benefits strongly outweigh the negatives, somewhat outweigh the negatives, or do the negatives strongly or somewhat outweigh the positives? And we came in that first year at 73%, that's that 27 and that 46, saying we think the benefits of beef either strongly or somewhat outweigh the positives. That's not bad. A 73 isn't a bad number, but there's obviously upside potential. So fast forward to some of the more recent years, and most recently we've climbed up to 78%. And again, in a lot of areas, if you have 78% of consumers believing that you're doing a good job, that's positive. And this is positive. However, we don't live in a vacuum. We have competitors, and if you look over here, we also ask about chicken, they're at 93%. So we spend a lot of time understanding what is it that they think about chicken versus beef, and I'll tell you a little bit about what those things are, that makes consumers a little more positive about that product. That's who we compete with for the most part. Just real quickly, we also ask in this survey, how often do you eat beef? You know, how often a week do you eat beef? And what we see is, and it correlates, and this should make a lot of sense, those people that are more positive, you look at their beef eating consumption, they eat more beef on a regular basis. But you go all the way down to bucket four, those folks that say the negatives strongly outweigh the positives, there's not a lot of them, but there's some of those folks also eat beef. So we have to think hard about how much effort do we get or put into trying to move a bucket four to a bucket three because they eat more, bucket three to bucket two because they eat more, and all of these folks are eating beef at some level. So the challenge is, what is it that's keeping the bucket twos, threes, and fours from eating more beef? How do we address that? How do we develop ads? How do we develop messages? How do we get influencers like nutritionists and MDs to talk about the benefits of our product so that we start to knock those barriers down and they will choose beef more frequently? We ask a lot of, I'll call them attributes, things about the product that through a lot of qualitative research, focus groups, talk to hundreds of consumers and say, what are those things when you're deciding what to eat for dinner are most important to you? And, you know, you're all consumers. You could probably come up with this list, but, you know, the top thing, those blue bars are how important they think it is. 95% are saying great taste, extremely important to us, makes sense. It's got to also be extremely safe to eat. It's got to be a good value. You got to have good results consistently. It's got to fit a moderate food budget. That's extremely important to a lot of consumers. And it's got to have a good balance of taste and nutrition. So those are like the top six things. We ask about 25 different things. These are the ones that consistently rise to the top, tell us this is what consumers want out of a good eating experience. The red bars are performance of beef. The yellow bar is how chicken performs. We ask all these folks to rate both of these products and pork, but I don't have that up here. But, you know, you can see, taste-wise, pretty neck and neck, extremely safe to eat. There's some upside there, 70%. I think there's still some concerns that come up. Every now and then there's a recall that impacts consumers' perceptions of the safety of our product. Good value. As you can see, the yellow bar is higher than the red bar. Folks see chicken as a better value. We know it's less expensive, but we know that the value proposition of beef, taking all things into consideration, the great eating experience, we should be able to move that number higher. Good results consistently, a little bit of a difference, but fits a moderate food budget. So you kind of see a theme there about perceptions not only of value and fitting a budget, but then also here, a balance of taste and nutrition. Chicken, for what I think over the years, you know, there's this chicken halo about nutrition. We do a lot of nutrition science research, and we know that, you know, for a similar 4-ounce serving, boneless, skinless chicken breast versus a lean cut of beef, it's roughly the same, and we have to continue to push that message and help dietitians and nutritionists that have a lot of influence and talk to a lot of consumers start to tell more consumers about that. Just some trending here, you know, over the years, you saw the trend from 2007 to 17 where we've kind of increased. A lot of these beef performances are going up. Taste has increased. Being safe to eat has increased. Always being tender continues to go up. Those are all positives. Just a little bit of data on the green bars there you see. Those are older millennial parents, and you can see that they are more food-centric. When we ask, how do you cook meals at home frequently? Millennial parents are saying, yes. Are you willing to try new recipes? Yes. Do you seek out new meal ideas? Yes. And do you cook to express creativity? I don't know. I don't have this data here, but there's a stat I saw that said a lot of millennials said they would rather go to a food show exhibition than to a music festival. So they are really into, I don't know if you see, there are probably a lot of millennials in the room, but people taking pictures of, hey, look what I ordered for dinner, look what I made tonight, and sharing it with their friends. So this is positive, because we didn't know when we see how large this millennial segment is, what if they're more negative to beef? Well, that's not the case. They're very pro-beef. That's a good thing. We're taking advantage of that. To take advantage of some of these metrics, we put a lot of information on Beef It's What's for Dinner, recipes, cooking ideas, a lot of those things that really draw them in. Just won't spend a lot of time on this, but we did a big analysis to say, you know, across these buckets, the bucket ones, the most positives, all those pluses or positives, good consumption, large segment. They love the taste. Beef versus chicken, they prefer beef. General nutrition, they think beef is positive, et cetera, et cetera. But as we go down these buckets, we start to see some negatives show up. That helps inform us, and this isn't the only information we use, as to where we need to focus year over year. We ask a question in the study that says, are you going to eat more or less beef, you know, over the next 6 months? And usually about, you know, 15, 16% say, I'm going to eat more. Then we say, well, why? What are those things that are going to get you there? And these are the things that they tell us. And I think, again, if you think about why people tell us they love beef, you see those things. One, it's a quick and easy meal. I prefer the taste. It's the right choice for more occasions. I've learned new ways to prepare it. I'm adding protein to my diet, etc. We also ask the inverse of that. the folks that say, you know what, I'm going to eat less. I'm going to eat less beef. We say, well, why is that? Here you can see that 5 out of the top 6 reasons are all health and nutrition related. You know, folks, they offer that information up. Why are you going to eat less? I'm going to eat less because of health reasons. I'm going to eat less because I'm trying to limit fat in my diet. I'm going to eat less because other meats seem healthier, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you see a little bit of, a concern about factoring farming creep in there. But again, the nutrition research, the checkoff funds, and, you know, we're not the only ones. We know the nutritional benefits of, you know, the protein, the zinc, the iron, et cetera, of beef. So that's a big area where we continue to engage these nutritional influencers and get them to recommend our product for all the right reasons. So that's a snapshot of a lot of what we do when it comes to the product. And again, we do a lot of, you know, very focused projects. If we see something in this data that's like, we need to know more about that, how are we going to message that to consumers so we do it in a way that's credible? Do we use a third party? You know, who are the most critical sources? All of that as we develop the ads and the talking points for consumers. So now I'm going to switch gears and talk just briefly about the Consumer Image Index. And that's a study we do once a year. It's 1,000 consumers, again, projectable to the population, that talks more about what consumers think about beef production, chicken production, et cetera. This is that similar question. There's that one I showed you a few slides ago about the product. We ask a similar question here that says, you know, thinking specifically about how cattle are raised for food, would you say the positives strongly or somewhat outweigh the negatives, or do the negatives outweigh the positives? And you can see that we're a little bit lagging here. It's not as positive for how cattle are raised. And when we dig deeper in there, it has a lot to do with a lack of information, a lack of knowledge, misperceptions, things that they see online that activists have put out there that are telling them all these myths about irresponsible practices, etc. So we take that information, we say, how do we best talk and educate consumers, and who are our best influencers to engage, and how do we do that to make sure consumers more and more, when they go out online, they find the good information from bloggers, they find it on our websites, etc., that helps them understand how our product is so responsibly raised. So again, here are the top, you know, I told you what were the top 6 of beef, the product. Here are the top 6 things that consumers consider most important when they think about production. It's got to be safe for my family. Bottom line, if it's not, you know, I can't consider it. You got to make sure you're dedicated to animal health. You know, consumers will say, I read things, I see things, I'm not so sure about that. That's critical for me to know and understand. Are you responsibly using antibiotics? Are you responsibly using hormones? Are you transparent? If I go out there, am I going to get the truth about how you use these things in your production practices? It's fascinating and kind of challenging in a lot of ways when you go to a focus group and you have a room, 5 or 6 consumers, and you're looking through the glass and listening to them as they talk about these things, their misperceptions about these practices. So we spend a lot of time doing ranch tours or developing videos that take people on virtual tours and put those out on the website so they can see exactly what's going on and hear from those producers. We engage producers to talk to consumers through these venues because they tell us, you know, if I hear it from a farmer or rancher, I can buy it. It's credible because I'm seeing him. He's there on his operation. He's doing the right things, etc. But it's, you know, it's an uphill battle. And the one challenge I would say with millennials is more and more they want to know about where their food comes from. You know, if you talk to boomers, you know, they do to some extent, but the millennials, they really want to know. They want to know about everything they buy. And the way their food is produced is especially important to them. So just a little bit more about that. You know, I mentioned that it's kind of a lack of information. Familiarity with how cattle are raised. We ask that question, how familiar are you? 33% say, we're pretty familiar. Well, when you start to dig in and you say, well, you know, what do you know about hormones being used responsibly? What about antibiotics? What do you know about? As they start to talk, you kind of start to get that, you know, they may not be as familiar as they think they are. And unfortunately, in a lot of cases, they are drawing from things that they see, you know, potentially from activist groups that are putting out misinformation and trying to sway their perceptions. That one importance one I showed you, openly share information with the public, it's very important. How do they say the beef industry is doing? It's less than 50%. So again, when we see this information, it's, you know, we don't just sit there and go, that's nice. This sets our priorities as to what we're going to work on in the coming year. And if you know a little bit about the planning process, it's rigorous. You know, the committees are going to be coming to Phoenix in January. We're going to be sharing some of our perspectives, but they're the ones that are going to say, here are the things based on that long-range plan I showed you earlier we want you to focus on next year. And then we spend the spring really boiling down our plans. At summer meeting that happens every year, those committees come back together and we present to them, NCBA and the other checkoff contractors, present our plan and said, hey, you told us back in January, here's what you wanted us to focus on. Here's our plan. Let us share it and present it with you, and you give us feedback. Are we on track? Something we missed? How should we tweak this or fix it, make it better? And then at that point, you know, we start the process all over again. Last thing I'll share with you, you know, consumers are concerned. We ask folks just basically, is there something about production that concerns you? And in this last consumer image index, a little over half said, yeah, there's things that concern me. And then, again, we follow that up with, well, what exactly is it? And these are, again, some of the things. You saw those in the importance factors. You know, I'm concerned about the treatment of cattle. I'm concerned about the safety of the product. I'm concerned about, you know, the use of hormones and antibiotics. And, again, you just have to listen to folks talk about that aren't in our industry to know the misperceptions that are out there. So that kind of tells us, you know, what are the things we really need to focus on and get better at educating consumers about how responsibly you all are raising cattle for beef. So that was kind of a whirlwind. I know there's a lot of numbers and data, but just to reiterate, you know, we really need to focus on where your checkup dollars get spent. So we spend a lot of time prioritizing and making sure through that planning process, working with the committees. You know, there's folks from Wyoming, obviously, on some of those committees that all come together and really make sure that they're keeping us on the right path and doing the right things. But again, it all kind of begins with that long-range plan I started out with. In terms of where the focus needs to be. Because if you think about it, there are so many things in so many areas that you could work on. How do you most efficiently and effectively utilize checkoff resources so that you're working on the right things? So with that, that's what I have for you today. I know the reception is right around the corner. I'm happy to take a few questions if anyone has.
We do have time for a few questions. Questions? Comments.
How do you deal with the misinformation? There's just so much misinformation out there, and it's like there's almost an entire industry just to disrupt all industries if you don't like it. So you said that you do focus groups to try to overturn that. But, I mean, how do people ever get to the truth?
Well, a couple ways. One, we know there is misinformation out there, and we can't. I mean, there just is. You know, there's a lot of big organizations that are anti-agriculture, and their goal would be to see agriculture go away, frankly. So what we do is we spend a lot of time, first, understanding what those myths are, two, talking to consumers to understand what their concerns are and where they're getting this misinformation, and then saying, okay, well, what do we do about that? You know, we spend a lot of effort identifying key influencers in the industry that are credible. Because a lot of times, you know, what consumers say is, you know, if the beef industry says they're doing a great job, of course they're going to say that. So how do you find third-party bloggers, MDs, you know, others in the industry that when they speak, it's like, well, I'm not saying this because I'm with the beef industry. I'm saying this because I believe it. I've seen it. We take a lot of folks out on ranch tours. I don't know if any of you have been involved in those. But we take them out and say, we get their perceptions before they go saying, what are you expecting to see? Because these are influencers that can touch a lot of consumers, that we get more power behind that. And then we take them out. They get to talk to the rancher. They see how the, you know, the antibiotics are administered and why. They see the pen riders, you know, the animal care that takes place. And after the fact, they're like, I had no idea how that happens. Now, it's difficult to take every consumer on one of those. If you could, it would be great. That's why we've kind of taken the step. And if you go out on Beef It's What's for Dinner, we'll soon be sharing some videos that really show what happens. What happens at the feed yard? What happens at the cow-calf operation? Very specific. And they can say, well, how do you do this? How do you do that? But, again, it's difficult because a lot of these folks have deep pockets, very deep pockets. But that's the challenge.
Yes. One of the things you said in visiting with the Millennium that you found, that they want to know where their beef comes from. Why is it then that the NCBA came out against Kuhl?
You know, I honestly can't speak to that. I'm not involved in the policy side of our organization. But as far as they want to know where it comes from, not what country necessarily, they want to know how is it raised. When I sit down to eat a steak, I want to know that, you know, wherever, whatever ranch it came from, that operation is responsibly using antibiotics and hormones, is being very responsible about animal welfare. That's more of what they're focused on in that regard.
Other questions?
So the beef checkoff gives us money to promote beef, essentially. And in Montana, there's a event that's going on right now where producers don't have to give their 50 cent to their state. The whole dollar can go to CBB and NCBA to promote. And as a Montanan who wants to keep some money in Montana, I know this isn't probably in your realm, but how can CBB and NCBA help Montana out?
You know, I think, again, one of the ways is to just continue to expound on the value that the checkoff over the years has meant to beef demand. You know, there's a study that's done, I think, every 5 years or so, where some economists get together, they look at a lot of data, and it shows the ROI, effectively, of a dollar of checkoff resources and the return that you know, that the producers can get from that. I mean, you know, there's a myriad of ways, but I think being able to very positively speak to the benefits and, you know, all the work that's being done, to the safety research, the nutrition research, et cetera. I don't know if that answered your question, but those are some of the ways I think would be helpful.
Anyone else? Well, let's give Rick a hand for his presentation. Thank you.